All right, welcome to Speaking for Yourself. I'm Jason Whitlock. That's Marcellus Wiley, that dude.
Yes, sir.
Coming up, we'll tell you if Jason Garrett should really trust Jerry Jones with his future.
And I've got an NBA All-Star Game edition of the Emmy Award-winning That Dude's Dude.
Da-da-da-da.
Well, we start every day with a Whitlock. Hit him in the head. What you got?
Oh, Marcellus, the sports world was rocked yesterday by the news that Khloe Kardashian and Tristan Thompson Kardashian split over infidelity issues. The breakup of Mrs. and Mr. Khloe Kardashian overshadowed the news of another more important sports divorce. Mr. and Mr. Big Ben Roethlisberger Brown filed for dissolution in Pittsburgh. Antonio Brown served the divorce papers on his Instagram account, posting a picture of himself with Steelers owner Art Rooney Jr. and announcing that he and the Steelers had agreed to separate. Roethlisberger and Brown form one of the greatest quarterback-receiver combos in NFL history. Only Peyton Manning and Marvin Harrison combine for more receptions than Ben and Brown. For nearly a decade, they were the John Stockton and Karl Malone of football. Could you imagine if Stockton and Malone had ended in this kind of nasty divorce? It all started this season when Brown accused Big Ben of having an affair with Juju Smith-Schuster, who led the Steelers in targets, receptions, and yards. Ben denied the allegation, claiming that after 7 years of a monogamous QB wide receiver relationship with Brown, he had every right to open up the relationship to other partners. Rooney Jr. sided with his quarterback. He pledged to restructure and extend Roethlisberger's contract. On Tuesday, Rooney attended couples counseling with Brown, hoping to convince the receiver to explore the benefits and the joys of a menage a trois, like the relationship Terry Bradshaw had with Lynn Swann and John Stallworth. Brown is a rigid one-receiver, one-quarterback traditionalist. He reportedly reported to Joe Montana's relationship with Jerry Rice as the model for an ideal QB wide receiver marriage. Brown allegedly shouted at Rooney, "At no point did John Taylor have more targets than Jerry Rice. If Ben wants to have Juju as a side piece, fine. But I'm not going to be disrespected publicly with Ben brazenly catting around with Juju. I'm not that kind of receiver. Ben's not dumping me for a younger, hotter receiver." Brown's fictitious rant reminded me of the real tweet he posted earlier in the week about Big Ben. "No conflict, just a matter of respect, mutual respect. He has an owner mentality, like he can call out anybody, including coaches. Players know, but they can't say anything about it. Otherwise, they meal ticket gone. It's a dirty game within a game. Hashtag truth." The split between Brown and Ben should lead to some real questions inside the Pittsburgh locker room and organization. Like any divorce, there's plenty of blame to go around on both sides. AB is clearly emotional and immature. He's a diva. But there's some merit to his complaint that Ben is unfairly and inappropriately above the law within the Pittsburgh organization. "I believe Ben's poor leadership is central to the Steelers' dysfunction. He has taken multiple pot shots at head coach Mike Tomlin. Ben has dishonestly flirted with retirement talk. His response to the Steelers drafting Mason Rudolph was childish. It would be a mistake for the Steelers to jettison Brown without addressing the Big Ben in the room." All right, joining the desk now are former Pro Bowl wide receiver T.J. Houshmandzadeh and making a Speak for Yourself debut, former Bucks general manager Mark Dominick.
Yeah.
Marcellus, I will start with you. Does Antonio's trade demand say more about Antonio Brown or Ben Roethlisberger?
Says more about Ben Roethlisberger.
Surprised me with that one.
And yeah, it really does, just because a lot of people out there are turning on Antonio Brown, saying, "Hey, you sixth-round receiver who played yourself into being arguably the best receiver in the game. How dare you change? How dare you get brand new on Ben Roethlisberger?" But you got to think about why he is acting brand new. There was a thing in that locker room formed called the Killer Bees. And like any great organization, when it comes to voting up top, it's an odd number. And it was three guys. It was Roethlisberger, Antonio Brown, Le'Veon Bell. Now, as this sixth rounder, Antonio Brown, started to climb that hill, he started to have leverage. He started to have voice. He started to have power. And once he got up there to the level of a Ben Roethlisberger, he started to speak his real piece. He started to speak his authentic voice. But what changed this year? No Le'Veon Bell. That voting's off now. It's not an odd number. It's even now. Ben Roethlisberger looks to the side before he gets outvoted. Le'Veon Bell, hey, Antonio Brown, I got to play with those guys. They're helping me. I'm helping them. But then when it was just AB speaking directly to Roethlisberger, you know what Roethlisberger did? He spazzed out on AB. Started to say, oh, I know how to get you back. Hey, Juju, come here, as you said. And started to show Juju so much love that all of a sudden, now we got this conflict right here. So you could get rid of AB if you want to. It'll be a mistake because you're still going to be stuck with Ben Roethlisberger, who's really the root of this issue.
I'm with you, Marcellus. Big Ben is the primary reason. From your wit log, basically it's Antonio Brown, or Mr. Big Chest, as he wants to be referred to now, is somewhat jealous of Juju in his I don't see that. Antonio Brown is by far and away the best receiver on that team. No disrespect to Juju. Antonio Brown leaves, you'll see Juju's stat drop a little bit just because he'll get the majority of, especially with not Le'Veon Bell there. It's, for me, Ben is, when he comes out and says, I've earned the right for as long as I've been here to call people out. You have earned the right. You can call them out privately.
Privately, that's right.
You can call them out privately. Don't call me out publicly because, let's go back. Antonio Brown was with Big Ben when he was accused of sexual assault in 2009 and 10. Did anybody come out and disparage Big Ben and say, oh, no, they supported him. Antonio Brown is like any player. We all have a bit of selfishness in him. We all want the ball. Don't call me out publicly. I won't have a problem. So many things have gone on behind the scenes that have never come out. And now it's just to the point where I can't deal with it anymore. But nobody ever talks about Big Ben and his transgressions. They don't do it.
No, they don't. And I think, you know, usually from the front office perspective, you're going to go, well, I'm going with the quarterback. I'm going with the receiver.
Why is that?
I'm going with the receiver on this one, too. And I agree, because I think the problem here is the leadership of Ben Roethlisberger. Whit, you talked about this in terms of, like, the flirting with retirement. Like, that's for me, when I was a GM of the Bucs, I used to get tired of hearing that because I'm like, what game are you playing? Why are you going down this road? It's not necessary. Is it to bring some light back onto you? But then to what TJ just talked about, there's a way to be as a leader as he should have handled Antonio Brown. If he's making mistakes on the field as a route running, you do that in-house, and I would want that done in-house. Right now, what I would be seeing happen going into the organization is Mr. Rooney's coming back unhappy, I would expect, after that conversation and letting the star player walk out that has a chance to catch Jerry Rice in the all-time catch list. That's an incredible statement to make. He's got a chance to do it if he gets to the right spot, but to let that walk out the door and be willing to do that, you need to have some one-offs in that building. It starts with Ben Roethlisberger, but it also brings in Cam Hayward, somebody on the defensive side that's seen that whole locker room from a different perspective. I'd want him in a meeting. I'd want Mike Tomlin in the meeting. Kevin Colbert's in that meeting, and the owner. We're going to start talking about what is going on here, and we're going to let Ben have his piece, but we got to also see where this is going to go.
I'm sitting here stunned, not because I disagree with y'all. It's just like because I'm just stunned that we all see this the same. To me, it's Ben Roethlisberger because he plays the quarterback position. And by position, he can't be as immature as Antonio Brown. Right. And so I expect a diva receiver to act like a diva receiver. What I want is a quarterback who can put the reins on and help us control the diva receiver.
Put the fire out.
Jerry Rice, from all reports, a diva receiver. Joe Montana and Steve Young knew how to handle that and knew how to make peace with that. Michael Irvin, a diva receiver. Troy Aikman knew how to have a relationship with a guy that clearly their personality. Troy Aikman, Michael Irvin, two different personalities. But Troy knew how to relate, handle, deal with Michael Irvin. Big Ben Roethlisberger, I've been saying it all season. I said it. We're not going to play the clip, but I said it in early December. I was like, Big Ben, they're going to mess around and miss the playoffs. Even when they were in control of the AFC North, because his leadership is that bad. And I say that not letting Antonio Brown off the hook. Antonio Brown's childish. He is a hard dude to control, from the blonde mustache to everything. He's extra. But that's what they're paying the quarterback for, to deal with the extra.
Yeah, man, especially at the quarterback position where the expectations are greater in terms of just even in the playbook. You have to know not only your position as a quarterback, but every other position on offensive side, and then what the defense is doing, even in disguise. Quarterbacks, in terms of cerebral capacity, have to have the greatest volume. And you're judged in a relative experience. So if I'm Ben Roethlisberger, I would feel slighted by what's happening in my organization when I haven't contrast what's going on in New England and the Tom Brady and what they're doing in terms of you're judged by your peers and you're also judged by your position. And he's looking at a Tom Brady who's able to make the most out of nothing, making household names out of guys who were castaways at one time. So when you have that type of contrast, you can't be the same guy that says, I'm going to take all the money and also take all the air out the room. You got to pick one. Your leadership has to step up if you're going to be a guy that's going to make sure that you're undermanned in some of the other parts.
The thing that people need to pay attention to is you see Mike Mitchell that played with the Steelers, a safety, come out and say, Antonio Brown is one of the best teammates I've ever had. Mm. You haven't heard anybody come out in Ben's defense and say, oh, man, Antonio Brown is wrong in this. Because the guys that are in that locker room, that are on that practice field, they know what has transpired. They know what has gone on, and they believe Big Ben is the majority. He is at fault for not handling this situation the right way. He knows Antonio Brown is somewhat sensitive. Handle it the right way.
Mark, I said yesterday and have been saying the solution to me is an empowered Mike Tomlin. How do you, because look, it looks like Brown is leaving. How do you fix Big Ben as a leader or fix that leadership void that's in the Pittsburgh locker room? Maybe your quarterback isn't the greatest leader. How does Mike Tomlin and that organization move forward to fix some of this?
Yeah, I think, and I worked with Mike at the Buccaneers, you know, for a long time. So I know Mike when he first came in the National Football League. He is a powerful voice now. He's a very strong voice in that locker room. He's got a strong personality if you've ever had a chance to sit down and talk to him. He can recapture that. I know that there's a lot of people in Pittsburgh who are like, I think we're going to move on. I know him from a leadership perspective. I trust that he can get back in front of that locker room and redirect all this nonsense that happened. And I think what he's got to do is he's got to be, look, I have addressed Ben. We talked about the quarterback and the wide receiver diva relationship. Michael Thomas is as big a diva as there is in the National Football League in terms of the Saints. Hmm. And Drew Brees has it under control all the time and making sure that he understands where the prize is going. And I think that's where Ben's lost. And I think what Mike Tomlin has to do, and that's why I want that meeting, is we got to sit in that room and have that talk with Ben so that when he goes out in front of that team, when they come back to report to camp or for the offseason program, Mike Tomlin can stand in front of the 90 men that are there and sit there and say, this is what's happened, this is what we're doing going forward, and this is our solution. So I have a plan mapped out for the veterans that are there. For the guys, like I said, the Cam Haywards, the T.J. Watts, you know, the guys that have been in that locker room for a little bit that know all the shenanigans or what's been going on behind the scenes, Mike's got to have that voice to sit there. I've addressed this, and I think Ben has to address it too. I think he has to stand up in front of that team and talk about what's going on and what's going to change, because there's one thing just to talk about it behind the scenes, but you got to stand up in front of people and say it and what you're going to do differently. And I think that's where Mike T and obviously Ben are going to have to do that to get that locker room to be comfortable again. Where I think they need to be.
Yeah, I just don't think they can ignore all of this noise. And look, AB may be the wrong messenger, but his message may be right. And that's what I go look at what Peyton Manning and Marvin Harrison. Marvin Harrison, a different kind of diva. He was he kind of isolated himself, a kind of a lone wolf. But Peyton Manning and him had a wonderful 10-year stretch where they completely dominated the league. Big Ben needs to look around at the guys that he considers his peers, the guys that he's chasing, and ask himself, why am I having this major fallout with my star receiver when the other great quarterbacks haven't?
Yeah, it's going to be a problem, man. If you try to cure the symptoms and not the illness, you're going to wake up the next day and still got the problem. You know what I mean? Take some NyQuil, nighttime sniffing, sneezing, coffee, achy, stuffy head, fever, so you can rest medicine. What happened when you wake up? You still feel like you're sick, right? And this is what's going to happen. They're going to wake up, AB's going to be gone, and they're going to still be sick because they're still going to have that issue in that locker room. And for me, I don't need you going to the podium, Ben Roethlisberger, and trying to say, I'm going to apologize, sir. I apologize, guys. I let you down. Nah, that ain't going to work because I have too many accounts and moments where you just sunned AB. So now this is going to make Juju have to fall in line. And Juju, Mr. Fortnite, Mr. Baller, is going to say, I am never going to buck Ben Roethlisberger because look what he did to my senior. Look what he did to my sensei. And so now he's going to have Juju fall in line, and everybody's going to fall in line accordingly. But with bad leadership, that's not a good place to be. So if they don't address Ben Roethlisberger directly, just look forward to this story regurgitating in a year or so.
February isn't just about one supersized football game. On Spotify, there's thousands of free sports podcasts that agonize over the preseasons, offseason, and plain old regular seasons of nearly every sport imaginable. Basketball, baseball, hockey, soccer, curling, and even hurling. Yes, that's a real sport. Now it's so easy to stay updated with the latest rumors, predictions, and scorching hot takes from some of your favorite game's biggest names. So take it one episode at a time and give 110% of your attention to the thousands of free sports podcasts on Spotify, because the best offense is a good podcast.
Time for a big story. Let's move to Dallas, where Jason Garrett will coach this season on the final year of his contract after Jerry Jones declined to give him an extension. But Jerry doesn't think it's a very big deal, explaining that he and the coach have, quote, real trust, and that they've done this before. He's not wrong. Jason Garrett was a lame duck coach in 2014, and they went 12-4 that season. I'm actually buying what Jerry's selling here, that they have real trust, and that Jason Garrett feels confident that if he has any, if they go back to the playoffs next year, he's going to get a contract. And they got to win a playoff game, and he's going to get a contract extension.
Man, DJ Quick Ben told me, if it don't make dollars, it don't make sense. And what Jerry talking about don't make sense, because you got a lame duck coach going out there again. Last time he was a lame duck, he did go out there and win a playoff game. They were 12-4, and the next thing you know, he gets his $30 million contract. You put him in that position again, we know why you put him in that position. You're not sold on him. And the one thing I remember in the transition from collegiate football to pro football was, oh, when they love you, they pay you. When they want you to be a professional, they actually show it in a monetary fashion. So don't sit there, coach, don't sit there, owner, and say glowing things about me. Because when I go to the bank, that's when I need to glow. That's when I need to shine. And Jerry, you're not letting me shine, and you put me in an impossible position to truly have authority over this locker room when they know I have less security than they do. And they could get cut on any given day. So a horrible situation, bad setup if you're Jerry Jones.
Sometimes you wonder, like, why does Jerry Jones come out and say these things? He knows good and well that this trust is a one-way street here. There's no way Jason Garrett feels comfortable in the situation he's in. He'll say it publicly because he has no choice.
Yep.
But he says we
Jerry
both have real...
a lot of loyalty, man.
Yeah, he has.
Yeah, but... He can't even be okay this year. They got to win a division. They might have to make it to the championship game of the NFC. If not, he going to get Sean Payton. Everybody knows that's what he wants to do. It's just a matter of, is he going to be able to do it? Real trust. Jerry Jones is like, I trust you, but not that much. I'm not going to let you go on vacation by yourself type of trust.
I've been there.
I see this from a little different perspective. And the perspective I see it from is a young coach in that team that's now the offensive coordinator, Kellen Moore. Because a lot of things happened to get Kellen Moore to that spot. Linehan, out, right? Jason Garrett, one-year deal. What have we seen in the National Football League? Everybody wants these young offensive play callers. I think they're positioning themselves because they don't want to lose the next Sean McVay. And they're looking at Kellen Moore because there's a lot of people behind Kellen Moore going, we got a good one here, we got a good one. And I think Jerry doesn't want to put himself in the spot and say, if he's what I think he is, because I'll get to see him call plays next year,
yeah,
I'm just going to promote him. So why am I paying two head coaches when I don't have to? So I see that from that perspective. They're looking at Kellen Moore saying, that's your next coach of the Dallas Cowboys, in my opinion, if the things go struggle enough where Jason Garrett doesn't win enough games. They're setting up the young man in that building to say, boom, he's the one. That's what I see.
That is a terrific point. And,
man, it is.
and it's one that I buy, but I love Jerry's strategy of it. He has his coach in waiting. But he also is like, hey, I've seen Jason Garrett with a gun to his head before, and it's worked.
And he responded.
And so let me put a gun to his head, and if it works and he goes on and takes us, we win a playoff game, maybe win our division, play in the NFC Championship, then Kellen Moore may elevate and I may lose him and he'll go someplace else, but I've gotten the results I wanted from Jason Garrett.
I got a little one. We'll take it to your perspective, right, a player's perspective. I learned this from Ozzie Newsome, I thought was great. He looked at Joe Flacco and said, prove it. He treated him like we're treating Coach Garrett right now. Jerry Jones is treating Coach Garrett like Joe Flacco was going into that Super Bowl year. And the Ravens said, we're not paying this young guy because I don't believe in him yet. So play it all the way out. He had to play it all the way out, and he got paid.
Yeah.
Same thing. The owner's treating it just like a head coach or GM would treat the player. The head coach is getting treated the same way now in this situation where you got to go prove it or I ain't paying you.
The point he's making,
you rarely see.
But again, in the Dallas organization where Jerry clearly has the most influence, maybe it works in the locker room.
Well,
that this dude he's getting treated no different than you.
Yeah, it's interesting. We rarely see it, but then we're going to see it multiple times with the same person.
Right.
So, you know, I get it. If you're Jason Garrett, you're betting on yourself. You know, bet on yourself. I respect that. But when you have the hammer, you have to swing it too. The Cowboys overachieved this year. Just think about what that team were in terms of expectations and then how they were going down and then they rose even higher than we expected. And look, this is not a championship team. Not yet, but they have championship pieces.
Whoa. They got a hell of a defense.
Yeah.
A hell of a defense.
And that defense matured this year.
No, I got it. But when you say it's not a championship team, anytime you roll out a great defense, you got a shot at a championship.
Oh, I said championship pieces that now can give you an opportunity going forward. But this season, I'm talking about August this year. This past season, August to what we left in January, we were like, oh, they got something there. Now, you got to let this guy go out there and let that mature. But I don't know if this is the best situation and circumstance for him to see this through. So basically, you're going to have a change of guard if this doesn't work out. But you still got those championship pieces. So that momentum is going to be disrupted. That chemistry may be affected. Who knows if a better coach can come in there and take them to a better place? Because maybe they just ride for Jason Garrett. The Cowboys have had holes, especially at the most important position in football, for a couple of years here. And we still act like Jason Garrett has to be the savior of all those ills. I don't know what coordinator can save that. Do you think that this is going to be a situation where the coordinator can really work around what Dak Prescott has in terms of some of his issues?
It was, number one, you say Jason Garrett's going to bet on himself. He ain't got a choice.
he has
no choice but to bet. Jerry Jones has basically put him in that position. Kellen Moore should help. And if you watch the Cowboys, they were very basic in the red zone.
True.
The receivers had to get open. You know, there was no creativity where the play design will give me a touchdown or the play design will give me a first down. They didn't have that. When I watch them, their guys had to get open, their protection had to be there, or they're kicking a field goal, or they're punting the ball. So hopefully Kellen Moore, coming from Boise State, they had to be creative with the type of talent they had. So he has that creativity in him because he's been doing it since college. I like Kellen Moore as a hire as well. I just, 1 year as a coordinator and then a head coach, woo!
We're joined now by Fox NBA analysts Jim Jackson and Dante Jones. It's time for Dat Dude's Dudes. Marcellus, what you got?
Truly a baller edition right here. We talk about us pounding them down in the paint versus Jim and Dante. I'll take us. Let's go with
what?
That dude's three, number three. Bucks, fantasize. Greek freak right here. We know Team Giannis lost to Team LeBron 178-164, but your boy had 38 points, 11 rebounds, and 5 assists. Now, let's start things off with the LeBron brick from three, and then we see Giannis gets the rebound. Oh, he's going to go out there and throw this ball to Jokic. This is a sports comparison here. Who's he look more like, the baseball pitcher, Shohei Ohtani, Cam Newton, or are we going to go with the German keeper, Manuel Neuer? Oh, look at that pass right there to Jokic, top two Euro players in the game today. Giannis is excited about it. Oh, I think it looks like the soccer player. Giannis, you know who you are. You that dude's number three.
That was Pat Mahomes.
Let's go with number two. Dwayne Wade, Miami Vice right here. Ooh, Miami Vice. We're going to go back and reminisce right here. Team LeBron, a little love. Durant intercepts the oop. Oh, and then Dwayne Wade, you know what? He sees his boy. Remember us? Miami 305. Shout out 305. Oh, throws the oop up high for my man, LeBron, to bring it down. Now let's soak this in because we've seen this before, right?
Mm-hmm.
2010. Man, huh? That's my man right now. Very similar.
Hey,
look at that.
This is one of the dopest pictures right here.
You see that? Top or bottom, you take your pick. Oh, vintage Miami plays right here.
That was vintage.
Look at that right there. Wayne Wade, Ron James, Ryan Wade, Ryan James. Not two, not three, not four. Well, actually, only two. Oh, we can respect what they did right there. Four finals appearances, two titles, and actual smiles from LeBron James. We ride together. We dunk together. Bad Boys 3 is out. That dude, number two. Now, my number one. Y'all all saw this. Stephen Curry. Good Lord, my brother. And finally, watch this alley-oop. that might be exciting just because we saw it all coming. Look at the new logo of the league. Joel Embiid intercepts that oop. Looking like the new logo. And is he going up the court? You're going to see Embiid throw it. Steph Curry, bounces that thing. And look at the bench. Now, that's the fun squad over there. Look at all those free agents, all that tampering, all that collusion going down. First of all, let's just
Steph
see this bounce pass right
Steph
here.
Steph traveled. Did you see that Steph traveled?
How high did that go? I ain't no Greece had astronauts going up there like that. Greek freak soared for this ball and pounded it down. Now, let's get the ruler out. Let's get the measurer out because we know this was high. Steph, don't travel. All right, he bounces it. How high? 16.8 feet. And then where did he go get it? 13 feet above the rim. Brings it down. You got to.
I don't like those calculations.
You think it was too low?
The box ain't 13 feet high.
I didn't do the math.
Is that the box?
You notice KD got out the way too? You notice that, right? Smooth got out the way.
Got to.
All right, that was great, Marcellus. Let's move to another guy who was at the All-Star weekend, Kyrie Irving, who just a couple of years ago was trying to get as far away from LeBron James as possible, but now is singing a different tune. A few weeks ago, Kyrie revealed that he apologized to LeBron for how things ended in Cleveland. And now he says he wants to build a legacy like his old teammate, saying, quote, I'm going to be that guy like Bron who leads the next generation of superstars. Question here is Kyrie delusional? I say yes.
Why?
Because I don't think he understands. You don't play your way into LeBron's position. You're anointed. You're chosen by the NBA and the league. They decide we're building the league around you. LeBron didn't play his way into it. They put him on the cover as the chosen one, and the league got behind. And his talent demanded that. But Kyrie doesn't have that kind of once-in-a-lifetime generational talent. He'll never be LeBron. He can't. That's Kevin Durant can chase all he wants. Mm. But Zion Williamson has a chance. They may choose to build the league around him, but it won't be Kyrie Irving.
Mm, those limits sound like projection, man, and the fears of individuals who say you're delusional when you think outside the box and you think that you're bigger than others expect you to be. But I'm with Kyrie. For LeBron's greatness and all of it, in totality, there's still room to even do more. If you think about what the opportunities presented, LeBron doesn't win a championship every single year. LeBron's not the MVP every single year. LeBron's team this year may not even make the playoffs. So I'm not trying to poke at LeBron. I'm just saying if I'm Kyrie, I could build myself up and saying, look, it's going to be difficult. There are going to be obstacles for me to be the focal point of a championship team just by a style of play. But I can be a centerpiece that attracts others, and we could go get this. There was a time where people told Steph Curry, some people said, don't even draft a dude. And then some people said, man, that dude's going to stay injured. Example. And then look what happened. They were able
That's another good example, though, Steph. Again, Steph, by play and by accomplishment, he should be on LeBron's level. But he's not.
Well, what you're saying, when there's one, there's only one. Like, there's going to be a transition of one. And that's the opportunity that Kyrie is looking for.
I think he's trying to build the resume. And there's nothing wrong for him projecting that and speaking on what his goal is. Does he have a chance? He has a chance because
So it's not delusional.
He's not delusional, but it's his set of goals that he's telling you.
The earth is flat.
He rescinded that comment already.
But and he'll rescind this one, too.
Six-time All-Star. Six-time All-Star, All-Star MVP, Rookie of the Year. Like, he's building that resume to be able to have that type of reverence in the NBA. He's going to have to get an MVP. He's going to have to get a Finals MVP to be able to put in that context. But I don't think he's delusional, no. I think he's just speaking what his goals are.
Well, I think it's different levels to it, too, though. I mean, be like LeBron in the fact of being a leader, being a captain, being a voice. You can do that. He can definitely do that. Now, he had struggles with that early on how to communicate to the younger players. That's something that he's going to have to work on in order to get players to buy into what you're preaching. That's the issue right here I have with Kyrie, is that you throw some things out there in regards to, I'm staying in Boston, but now it's like, well, maybe I'm going to wait to the end of the year to see what's best for me. That is not the kind of leadership you want when you want to involve people, because now you're sending mixed signals to your locker room, and that has an effect on the court. So I don't think he's delusional in that fact, but I do believe you have to evolve into that kind of person by playing, I think the things you do on and off the court, you just can't say, I want to be like LeBron. You have to prove that year in, year out on a daily on a daily basis. Until you do that, you don't gain that respect in the locker room.
Well, I understand that, but it's unfortunate that we're going to grade Kyrie and his projections of what he desires based on LeBron's results. That's two different.
But he said LeBron.
Because LeBron had missteps.
But here's the thing, though.
But go back to when LeBron was Kyrie's age.
Oh, here's the thing. If Kyrie never
was he a champion at that age?
But listen, if Kyrie never mentioned I want to do like LeBron, then we won't compare it.
No, I'm not mad at the comparison.
But I'm saying, but he opened the door for us to interpret that in that way.
Right. But there was a day where no one ever could catch Michael Jordan. When he left the game, people was like, please, who's going to be number two for life? And now there's a conversation, is there a 1A, 1B?
A legitimate one?
Yes.
A legitimate one?
Look, if you don't agree with the comment, it is legitimate. You can't say that LeBron is getting sung by
Michael
Jordan.
There will be a legitimate one at the end of the day, at the end of somebody's career. I think so.
Yes.
But I think this is the beginning of it. I don't have a problem with him stating that, because once you state it, then you hold yourself accountable to it, and you start taking the steps necessary. So if he's projecting that and giving that out there, then that means he's going to try to be the guy that you said he has to be, on and off the court, the leader, and he has to hold himself accountable as being that type of leader. And I think at 27, he can, by building his resume, to do that.
I think Kyrie, Kevin Durant, they need to remove LeBron from their equation and don't let any of their actions be motivated by the pursuit of LeBron. They're not going to catch him. They're not in position. In terms of, again, when you are the chosen one of a league, and the league decides, we're going to ride or die, we're going to live and die with you, we're going to offer you a level of protection and support that no one else in the league is going to get. Kyrie, Kevin Durant are never going to get that. And so when I listen to Kevin Durant a lot of times, I hear the jealousy. And again, and I'm not saying that as a negative, but he has some jealousy of LeBron and the way LeBron is treated by the media.
Man, we are forgetting, man.
And I know LeBron had some missteps and was beat up for a while, but overall, over the course, LeBron is a protected species because, again, we all benefit from LeBron's excellence, narrative, and storyline. We all benefit from it. So we all have a vested stake in making sure it remains upright and glorified so that, because we all ride LeBron's wave. No, that's just a fact.
Look,
ride KD.
I'm invested in the meritocracy of sports. I'm invested as if you're really the king, you got to be the king. And all moments improve that. Look, LeBron at 26 was in Miami losing a championship game to the Dallas Mavericks when people were questioning him as a clutch player, as a leader, and then said you went ring chasing and came up donut. So Kyrie's like, I'm at that point. This is like a track and field reference. Every time you see Usain Bolt break another world record, remember, there's an 11-year-old running faster than Usain Bolt at 11. Will he be Usain Bolt? More likely, no. But is it crazy to grab that one kid and say, he's got a chance? All I'm saying is he's not delusional because he has a chance.
He's the best Kyrie and Kevin Durant you can be. Take your eye off.
Robinhood is an investing app that lets you buy and sell stocks, ETFs, options, and cryptos, all commission-free. While other brokerages charge up to $10 for every trade, Robinhood doesn't charge any commission fees, so you can trade stocks and keep all of your profits. Plus, there is no account minimum deposit needed to get started, so you can start investing at any level. The simple, intuitive design of Robinhood makes investing easy for newcomers and experts alike. View easy-to-understand charts and market data and place a trade in just 4 taps on your smartphone. You can also view stock collections such as the 100 most popular. With Robinhood, you're going to learn how to invest in the market as you build your portfolio, discover new stocks, track your favorite companies, and get custom notifications for price movements so you never miss the right moment to invest. Robinhood is giving listeners of Speak for Yourself a free stock like Apple, Ford, or Sprint to help you build your portfolio. Sign up at speak.robinhood.com. That's speak.robinhood.com.
Time for my favorite segment.
Time
got me a new bottle of Twitter off, all powered up.
Time for some anti. Mm-hmm.
Darnell Smith, our social media manager's here. Swole, what's poppin'?
Hey, man, we're going to start with some big drama that's been going on social media.
Don't do it.
According to TMZ, Khloe Kardashian had to cut it off with Tristan Thompson because the man allegedly
got caught cheating again. Mm. Tristan came to L.A. last week for Valentine's Day to spend time with Chloe, but witnesses say Tristan went out a few days later and was seen making out with a girl named Jordan Woods at a party. Now check this out. This girl happens to be best friends with Kylie Jenner,
not no more.
Chloe's sister. Right. Word on the street is Chloe confronted Tristan and ended it with him. I'm going to toss this straight over to my guy, Iceberg Jim Jackson. Are you surprised this celebrity couple didn't last?
No.
Why not?
Come on, listen. One, she got paper. He papered up. He's still in the league. He's still young. The number one rule when he got caught early at the club and at the hotel, one, you don't leave. If you're in a relationship, you don't leave a club with a girl. Number two, okay? You don't walk in a hotel with one. You leave a key at the front desk, meet him around a little bit later. You never do that. So he was doomed from the beginning. It wasn't going to work because he wasn't ready to be in a committed relationship.
Preach, brother. I mean, look, he's been acting out like he didn't want this as fully as maybe she wanted it. Whatever reasons. You could say it's because he's young, because he's in the league, because he got his own, he got too many temptations.
All of it.
All of it. But guess what? Even if you wanted it with all that going on, you don't move like this, big dog. Like you said,
you don't
speak to nobody when you're out. Fans only, shoulder up. Here we go, picture, get out my face. That's all you do now. What you gonna do is you gonna do. This situation was doomed from the beginning. And I'm sad to see that Tristan has to get drugged in the mud for it.
I'm not going to add anything to other than, I think she needs an older man.
Yep.
I think someone between 45 and 51, perhaps it lives on Wilshire Boulevard, would be more appropriate. But,
somebody that's out the game, right?
All right, Darnell, what's next?
All right, man, moving on to my favorite cousin, Kirk Cousins. The Minnesota QB has been getting a ton of backlash after posting this tweet while in Miami.
Backlash?
In 2010, I was mad at LeBron for leaving Cleveland, but I've been in Miami for a total of 5 minutes, and now I totally understand. Vikings fans took it as disrespect and went in on Kirk with a bunch of funny tweets and gifts. Obviously, Kirk didn't expect that kind of backlash and later responded to it all with this classic Anchorman line. Boy, that escalated quickly. Should Minnesota fans be this upset or are they tripping?
No, they shouldn't be upset. I don't even know what they're upset about. He was clearly tweeting from Tootsie's.
The office, right? They shouldn't be upset. They should get a plane ticket and see what he's talking about. If you've been to Miami and realize those conditions in those few square blocks right there, my goodness, there's nothing better in this world than those few.
I lived there and I played for the Heat. Now, it was a catch-22, though, because Pat Riley was on our So he knew everything that was going on. He made practices so hard, you didn't want to go out.
I get it.
But, bro, after practice, I go down to the beach, have some lunch, chop it up a little bit. It's a beautiful thing when you literally go to Prime 112, have something to eat. Have a little cigar on the beach.
Oh, say it again. What? Kirk Cousins and Tristan Thompson getting it. Tristan, you better kick it with Kirk.
What?
And Kirk's still married, but he was like, I shouldn't be here.
I get it.
I shouldn't be here.
Darnell, what's next?
So this morning on First Things First, our guy Doug Gottlieb has some strong words on Manny Machado's historic 10-year, $300 million deal. Take a listen.
10 years for Manny Machado? He was a dog in L.A. He's stepping on the ankles of first baseman. He's saying, I ain't Johnny Hustle. Like, hey, dude, we're paying you $300 million. You're going to be Johnny, Charlie, and any kind of hustle we say you are. This dude's a dog. And you give him $300 million and you put him in San Diego where they're not going to be competitive this year and you expect him to play hard every day? Dude, this is going to be a terrible deal.
Y'all agree with Doug? Is he being too harsh?
I agree with Doug. Name me one of these 10-year deals in Major League Baseball that's worked out. Albert Pujols, Robinson Cano, Alex Rodriguez. Name me Giancarlo Stanton.
Stanton.
Kershaw.
None of them have worked.
Well, look, we know why it doesn't work on the field because you're just going to, you know, Father Time's undefeated. You're going to get out your prime during that deal. But it works in terms of attraction. It works in terms of the economy of baseball, which has been a regionalized sport, which has been a localized sport. I've been down to San Diego recently and for the Padre games last year. They needed that attraction. They thought that they were getting it a couple of times. They've swung for the fences before. And this is their way. No other way, because they're not going to win in terms of on-field performance, bring that attention. So they try to win with star power.
Cost of doing business, right? Yeah. I mean, in regards to getting fans in the stands, marketing, TV, doing all of those things. Now, the thing is, and Jason, I agree with you on this, that 10-year deal, especially on the back end, is where you pay. because he can have success early on, but then 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, those years back then,
yeah.
Now the value is not there. Right. He getting that bag.
This is A-Rod all over again. He wants to play shortstop. They got a good young shortstop. He's going to have to play third base. He's not going to be happy. Now, that new stadium is like 15 years old or something, and so maybe he will draw some extra fans because the stadium's no longer the draw and they're not going to win a lot of games.
There it is.
All right, Darnell, it's time for Darnell's question of the day. Take it away.
It's Darnell. That's my guy. My guy. My question of the day. My question of the day.
Oh, dog. Get him.
Thicky Longstocking.
Dog. Yo, all right, next time that come on tomorrow, everybody look at his boy's camera phone in the beginning, the first clip. It's LeBron's All-Star first one. Remember that little baby, that little flip? Oh, man.
All right, man. I love my haters. But anyway, okay. Yesterday, Steph Curry and former President Barack Obama spoke to the youth in Oakland at a My Brother's Keeper event. And we all know athletes have become much more politically active as of late. But do y'all think pro athletes should be leaders in politics?
Wow. I'm glad you asked this because I have an answer and I can't wait to get the reaction to the athletes, of the athletes. I don't think so.
I knew that. I knew that.
Let me explain why. I just think athletes haven't realized, and we as the public haven't realized, things have changed so drastically for athletes. We keep wanting the athletes to be like Jackie Robinson or Muhammad Ali or John Carlos and Tommy Smith, and we haven't realized, and again, this is where I want y'all's reaction, because I don't think y'all have realized that when you go from a college campus at 21 or 22 years old, or in the NBA at 19 years old, and then you become a millionaire, there are so many life experiences that you have missed that don't give you a full perspective of, and so we keep like saying with LeBron James, you know, he struggled as a child. That was his parents' struggle. I grew up poor and had no idea that we were poor. My mother says it all the time. My father says it all the time. That's your parents' struggle, not yours. There are so many life experiences that the high-profile athlete misses out on. And look, more power to them. Go from college to being a millionaire. But there's all parts of the struggle they've missed and don't understand. And that's where I think their disconnect is from working class people.
Agree with you, actually. Respect for your reasoning. Mine's a little different. From my experience, I think the athletes should be supporters in terms of politics. They should lend their platform to help the message have more volume, but they shouldn't dive into it. I'll give you a case in point, whether it's a Cornel West or Michael Eric Dyson. These dudes have PhDs from Princeton, and they're the ones that should be speaking to the fullest of this versus a guy who's like, hey, man, I just finished practice, but now let me go and get the Cliff's notes of this and try to dive into it. I just think that it takes so much more expertise, in part through experience, that athletes should be supporters, but not necessarily the leader.
So are we talking about current athletes or just athletes, period?
Well, I think professional athletes.
I think it's critical because if you look at a Bill Bradley, a Steve Largent, if you look at...
Yeah, Fanera.
But that's what I'm saying. Are we talking about now?
Yeah.
Because here's my thing. I do believe there's a place, because at being an athlete, it teaches you, especially a team sport athlete, it teaches you, one, how to deal with others. It teaches you communication skills, okay? It teaches you how to grind and actually put your head down and achieve something. Now, along the way, it is, I think, a slot for an individual to step over to politics. But they have to be careful when they take that step that they really dive in and understand that. I don't think you should just go away from it. Dave Bing was the mayor of Detroit. Again, a different era, but it's happened. You had Jesse the Body Ventura, who's the governor of Minnesota. Mm-hmm. Okay, Arnold Schwarzenegger. So it's been a crossover with certain individuals who dedicated themselves to understanding the political landscape. And if you can do that...
As an active player, though?
I'm not as an active player, but post.
Well, post, yeah. Once you have the full attention, once you now have read up, you have had the experience, I give you some
people
of that.
People get upset when I say this. Mm-hmm. But this is just a fact, and I don't care if people don't like it. These athletes of today's era, mm-hmm. with the millions of dollars funneled to them and the way that they're treated by society in a very privileged way, they're really no different than Donald Trump. And I don't particularly want more of that. I don't want the pampered of society in key political positions, because I don't think they can relate to the masses of society. Whether we like it or not, when you walk off a college campus to millions of dollars, you are part of the elite. And it's hard for your perspective to be in line with the working class.
Let me give you a pushback. Yeah. You said you grew up poor, but it was a parents' issue.
It was my parents.
Okay, so that's you as an individual. It is the case in point where, let's take a LeBron James, and I'm just speaking in terms of generalities. If you're moving from school to school, place mm-hmm. to place, mm-hmm. that can become a personal issue to that young man that affects him mentally, his confidence. So it may not affect you, but it can affect somebody else who's going through that. So it's not just the parents' issue.
Thank you.
He has to go to school and deal with the fact that maybe he doesn't have the right clothes and kids are teasing him. Yep. No. That's something that personal him. To him. Best just because it didn't world. Happen to you,
that doesn't mean it don't
happen to other people.
But again, those bad experiences as a child, I'm not sure if they make you a better political, I don't know if it helps your overall political point of view.
Why not? It gives you a perspective of what it is to be at the bottom in regards to not
as
having
a child.
But now you're living in best of both worlds.
Yeah, exactly. Or now you know what you don't want.
You live
now
in
you
the
know
low
what
and
you
high.
Don't want.
Low
now you know how to speak
child,
to that.
As a child, not as an adult. Voters are adults. Policies, for the most part, should be catered for adults and what helps the overwhelming mass. The experience of going from real poverty, and again, let's just be clear about LeBron, by the time he's 12 or 13, I'm just sorry, life is completely different. Everybody knew this guy was on track to be mm-hmm. an ungodly basketball player. So that little limited experience as a 12-year-old just doesn't prepare
okay,
you.
Okay, let me push back real quick. Yeah. For me, I'm gonna take personally.
Yeah.
Grew up in the central city of Toledo, went to Nathan Hale, elementary school. We had used books. We didn't have all the stuff that other schools had. I knew we were behind,
yep.
okay? I got bused to a junior high school where it was integrated. I had to deal with that. So those experiences to me, now when I'm talking about giving back to the community, shaped my thought process as I got older on why I want to do things. So those things to me stuck with me. So if I were trying to do something politically, I do have a base of understanding what happens in those situations.
And the last thing, because we got to go way over.
Ooh, I love this.
There's a bunch of experiences that grown people have from age 21 to 45 mm-hmm. that struggle, working class people, that I'm just, you haven't experienced, you have no, and that's the overwhelming reality for most Americans that you have no experience with. Now, I respect your experiences as a child, but the overwhelming, that doesn't prepare you for what the rest of society, working class society, experiences from age 21 to perhaps death. We gotta go.
But knowledge is not just gained through struggle. Come on, man.
I'm Jason Whitlock, he's Marcellus Wiley. Time to put on our thinking caps. All right, we're joined by Duke's Dante Jones and the Ohio State's Iceberg Jim Jackson. As you all know, I'm a journalist, and we've got our resident Ivy Leaguer.
I don't have any water.
Marcellus Wiley.
Bottom of the Ivy League.
We'll take a deeper look at a big issue in sports.
Bro.
Got a special cap for our Columbia grad, Darnell, bring it on.
That Darnell.
Oh, huh?
Oh,
looking brother. Real studious with the glasses.
Right. I like that. I can play that off.
I like that.
I could get that.
Let's move to college basketball, where we don't have the biggest amount of time here, where we will see a huge matchup tonight with number one Duke hosting their hated rivals, number 8 North Carolina. Duke has put together one of the more compelling teams in recent college basketball history, led by budding superstar Zion Williamson. The effect of having a real star in sports that's been lacking is clear. Prices to get into the Cameron Indoor Arena tonight are damn near at Super Bowl levels. This is turning into one of the most talked about regular season college basketball game in decades, which leads me to my point. And guys, I'm sorry we don't have the ideal amount of time here, but I think college basketball and the NBA would benefit from requiring the athletes to stay 4 years. And again, before everybody's heads explode, I think the athlete, the top 100 basketball prospects should be paid a significant amount of money. If they had to pay Zion Williams $2 million this season to stay Duke for another year, it's well worth it for the NBA and college basketball?
I'm going to be quick with this. No, I disagree with you, Whitlock. One, the top-end talent in the NBA, they're not four-year players. As a matter of fact, of the 50 All-Stars over the past five seasons, only four of those 50 played all four seasons.
That's a different era, though, Marcel. If you go look at the all-time greats, they all played more than one season.
LeBron, Kobe, KG, T-Mac.
No, I don't get it. I love that's all in y'all. The one and done straight out of high school.
Dirt. Like, it's a lot of dudes.
Yeah,
like, it's almost like if you're still in college playing basketball, we're whispering to you, you need to be in college still playing basketball. You need to get your game up. That's how the game is.
My point, Dante, is that if you go back to the previous eras, Larry Bird, even Magic for just 2 years, Isaiah for 2 years, these guys used to bring their college fan base to the NBA. Yeah. And we need more of that. If NBA really wants to reach its highest potential, it needs the same model as the NFL. Baker Mayfield brings a huge college football audience to the NFL. I wish we could get back to that in college basketball, and that includes paying these guys real money to stay in college.
But you don't take into fact in consideration the things that happen over guys who spend 4 years of college and the possibility of injury or not making it to the NBA and the possibility of picking your talent apart. You spoke of guys that got better as they got in, as over their tenure in college. That's not the case for you being in college. I played with guys that were projected top five pick their freshman year and play two more years, end up being a second round pick. You get a chance to pick them apart more, and some guys get better in college and some guys get worse. Mm-hmm. You just got to take advantage of the ability to make the most money as soon as you can.
It's tough for me because calling college basketball, I want to see the best player and I want to see him there for a long time. I do. I really do, because it enhances the game. And I agree with you on this. I said this a long time ago. The one and done where it hurts college basketball is the fan base, because when we were playing, they got a chance to see guys 2, 3, 4 years. You developed, I think, a personality in college. But the fan, even if they didn't know you, developed a relationship. And that did carry on to the league. But my thing is, like you, if a young man has an opportunity to go to the league and make money and start his career early, he should have that opportunity to do that, okay?
Limitless amounts of money.
I'm going to give you a prime example. Greg Oden, okay, he leaves Ohio State after 1 year. Knee injuries. If he stays, he's still going to have those knee injuries. He never gets that contract. No, he's going to have that injury. Wow. That was there anyway. And it was a matter of time before it was going to happen. He could have been in school 2 or 3 years. He wouldn't have been the number one pick. He wouldn't have had that contract, and his life would have been totally different. So that's where the pushback for me comes. If a young man has an opportunity to step up at 18, 19 years old after 1 year, or even out of high school, to take advantage of the free market, then he should have an opportunity to do it.
You can also argue that staying in college longer adds more miles to your body and adds more damage to you.
How? Because playing 30 games over 82?
It's not the games. The way they train, it was more taxing a college season because it's a full, long, 4-year commitment. So that's off-season training, in-season training. Then as soon as you finish
you
that season.
You don't train in the NBA off-season?
Not like college.
Not like college. It's a grind. They feel like they have you there, and you just do what we ask you to with no perspective of what is supposed to happen. So
you're supported with better resources in the pros. One, you don't have the distractions that are unnecessary. Why am I balancing accounting, wood shop, other classes?
You have jobs in college.
You got jobs.
Why are you developing your mind as a young person? That's just crazy, isn't it?
Well, you know what? I'm going to tell you what, Bruce.
You're developing your mind to make money at the end of the day. Like, you can't make money.
You're developing it for a career.
I wasn't developing my mind just to make money. No, I really wasn't. Because when I was in college, I had dreams of making $70,000 a year when I was 40 years old. That was my dream. So it wasn't about money. It was about developing my mind.
But you know what? It's funny. College is supposed to just build up the hardware for you. So in life, you can apply all software to it and be good. So that's what college is. And that means a lot of things to a lot of different people. If you're a player who has built up the hardware in terms of your talents to the point where you can now monetize it, bye-bye. College, I'm not staying for
you. I'm not arguing that they shouldn't be able to monetize while they're in college.
But you're,
the solution to me is for these guys to make money while they're in college. Real money.
But you're
not
taking
some
away
stipend.
From the ability to make more, like the ability
I agree,
to make,
we're limiting
so what about sponsorship endorsements? Like you're putting a cap and he has to wear that uniform with that sponsorship and you get that check.
I'm looking at Zion Williamson right now. He's been the only thing that's happened to college basketball in the last 10 years. He's turned this game into tonight into must-see TV. if we were to pay him next year $2 million, and Nike, I think, makes their uniforms at Duke, and they kicked in another $500,000, I think that's a fair exchange
you'll be limiting
for
him.
You'll this guy
you'll
to
be limited
make. I get he's limited, but
you'll
it's
cut
not
him
a
off
bad
for
deal.
$15 to $20 million?
And you know what? This is not the only thing that happened to college basketball the last 10 years. I remember when Lonzo, 1 year. People were going insane over this
Marcellus,
dude. Was he a better prospect?
Marcellus.
But there was a mania around Lonzo.
Marcellus.
It's not as
don't
big as
turn into LeVar.
Go to LeBron James.
Don't compare Lonzo
what?
To this Zion Williams.
Oh, so when LeBron goes to Zion's games, you're not going to talk about Magic going to Lonzo games? I mean, I get it.
Jim,
but we've been
you
here before.
College basketball. Lonzo.
It's not the same.
Thank you.
But it gave. What happened, though, it did with Zion, also R.J. Barrett, and also Cam Reddish. It gave the casual fan a reason to watch college basketball early. Because generally, you're not watching college basketball until the football season is over. But because of him and because of all the aura around it, now more people want to tune in to watch and see what's happening with Duke basketball ahead of schedule. So,
yeah.
And so, Dante, let me answer this question
for you. We're going to do that a lot.
LeBron James could have played in the NBA at 16. Do you agree or disagree? He could have played. Okay. He wouldn't have been great. The guy came out at 18, averaging 20 points.
I say yes. Could have played. Point.
So they limited him for his junior and senior year of high school. He couldn't make money.
Yes, because of the ability.
Those
to
are
go.
The rules.
You're absolutely correct. But at 18, you're trying to cut him off from an extra $60 million. Mm. Zion, who knows what Zion's first sneaker deal is going to be? Mm. Because if he's as good as he going to have leverage on much sneaker.
100 plus
let's say you're going to cut off $100 million to give him $2 million a year for 4 years. 8 to 100, you're capping him off.
Yeah. Cap.
All right, welcome back. Whitlock and Wiley. TJ Housmanzada's back. Let's return to the NFL. Where the news out of Colin Kaepernick's collusion settlement continues to reverberate across the league and beyond. Now the Reverend Jesse Jackson has weighed in, equating Kaepernick to the likes of Jackie Robinson, Kurt Flood, and Spencer Haywood, though he wasn't able to actually articulate what Kaepernick has accomplished besides, quote, winning. Yeah, when Reverend Jackson talked about Kurt Flood, oh, open up free agency. Spencer Haywood, oh, you can enter the draft early. Mm. Jackie Robinson, oh, black people can play Major League Baseball. Cap, oh, he's winning. Mm. So the question, what has Cap actually accomplished? Could we help Jesse Jackson out here? That has he brought the Afro back in style?
Man.
What are his accomplishments?
Okay, I thought that was peculiar as well. Somebody who was very long-winded and articulate and eloquent like Jesse Jackson didn't have much to say when it came to filling out the description of what Colin Kaepernick has won. But I'll help him. He evoked, inspired people in the continuum of life. And these are the three elements of that continuum. It's thoughts, words, actions. Wherever you were, he was able to make you feel inspired to take the next step. Some people were just thinking about social injustice. He made them turn that into word, into conversation. Some people were just talking about it. He said, hey, man, it's time to go back to the neighborhood. Give a couple bucks. Give them your time, talent, your energy, your treasure, whatever it is. He was able to take people and inspire them to take the next leap, including some of the superstars of today's game. Steph Curry, LeBron James come to mind. Their courage, wait a minute, their courage comes from this. Colin Kaepernick was the windshield, and they were able to be in the driver's seat and ride along Stop with it. Colin Kaepernick while he took all the hits. Stop. Think about the windshield. You take the hits, you take the rubble, you take the pebbles, you take the crap. But you know what? Other people jumped in that ride
LeBron
with them.
I got to defend LeBron James. He was not following in behind
Colin I didn't Kaepernick. Say follow.
Colin Kaepernick falling in behind
I didn't say follow. I said he was on the ride with Colin Kaepernick in terms of there's more courage
He's
in this
dragged.
Discussion. Semantics. I would respect that. Ahead, but they all rolled together with more velocity because
the Afro, he's brought back.
What has he
accomplished? Rolls.
It remains to be seen because the journey is just starting somewhat. He's young. And so if he can, in fact, exact change moving forward, and he brought awareness. That was the biggest thing is.
Oh, no one had heard of police brutality.
No, but I give you that one.
Right. No one
nobody. I mean, if you look at it now, you got entertainers, you got athletes, they speak on it more. They weren't doing that before he...
Jussie Smollett, then. He's accomplished that.
What?
He's responsible for Jussie Smollett. He's inspired entertainers to speak out now and to lean into their victimhood.
So pre-incident, Jesse, you saying he inspired him to go to that place?
I'm saying that Colin Kaepernick nailing himself to a cross has inspired other entertainers to nail themselves to a cross. Oh, look at me.
Oh, look, don't think I don't have issue with Colin Kaepernick in terms of trying to be
but
the
I think
leader
we would all
and
agree
face of a cause that
no
was already
athletes
there.
Were at the they weren't willing to go to this level before he did this.
Right, that's
where
the courage came.
They weren't doing that.
Yeah, but here's the thing. My issues with Kaepernick was there shouldn't be a leader of the cause. There shouldn't be a face of it. Because like you said, we grew up and we heard this and dealt with this before. So I didn't like that part of it.
My question, again, we keep moving. What has he accomplished?
I just gave you that.
Jesse Jackson.
It remains to be seen.
And I'm going to give y'all the answer. I'm going to help y'all cheat. Because he has accomplished. Yeah, it was unintended. Completely unintended, but you have to give him credit for the Players Coalition.
Mm-hmm.
And you have for the money that Malcolm Jenkins and his organization have got totally. When he took a knee, he wasn't like, hey, I want to create a Players
Coalition. So he went into it with no plan, and this is just
unintended
consequences. And it's a positive one.
Oh, yeah.
And you have to give him credit for that. So if Jesse Jackson wants to compare him to somebody and say, you know what? Accidentally, Colin Kaepernick led to something good. And we need to celebrate that. If that's what Jesse Jackson wants to say, that's what we can say Colin Kaepernick has accomplished. Other than that, what he has done, and
that's a huge leap to say other than that. You got to stay with that because that is huge. The NFL
I'm going to tell you what, to me, what his number one impact, and it sounded like I was being sarcastic and flip, and I was, but I was also being serious. He has elevated the coolness of being a victim. And again, he has led directly. Jesse Smollett sitting down like, man, look what Cap, look, man, he
it's
nailed himself on a cross.
Different.
I mean, I'm not getting that connection.
Different.
We're like,
oh, it's
I ride with you, but you got to take
clear
me.
As
where
day.
Are we going?
That's not
it's
parallel.
Clear as day.
That's not
I don't
parallel.
See it. Go.
No way.
It's
go.
Victimhood. And Jesse Smollett just took it to the next level. Oh, look at me, I'm oppressed. I'm taking a knee. America's terrible. And Jesse Smollett said, you know what? Hold my beer. Look how terrible it is for me. Look what happened to me. The MAGA people attacked me. That's all it's from the same cloth. It's all the same, whether we like it or not. So congratulations, Kaepernick. Uncle Jimmy's here to help us talk about our approval rating for Pittsburgh quarterback Big Ben Roethlisberger. What's up, you a Dallas Cowboy? What?
No, actually, I'm going to let you know if I get my personal business. It's mate night tonight, you know what I'm saying?
Mate night.
It's who?
It's mate night. I'm going to got a date, you know. I go out when they see me come in dressed like this, with the kind of women I like to hang out with, grab them, let them go.
Whoa. Baby. We're
going
to stop.
Where y'all
stop,
going?
Stop, yeah, stop. Yeah. Here's a highlight.
Yeah, where are you going?
From our discussion earlier
Lord.
About Ben Roethlisberger.
Safety first.
Antonio Brown served the divorce papers on his Instagram account, posting a picture of himself with Steelers owner Art Rooney Jr. and announcing that he and the Steelers had agreed to separate.
He started to have leverage. He started to have voice. He started to have power. And once he got up there to the level of a Ben Roethlisberger, he started to speak his real piece. He started to speak his authentic voice. But what changed this year? No Le'Veon Bell. But then when it was just AB speaking directly to Roethlisberger, you know what Roethlisberger did? He spazzed out on AB.
All right, Uncle Jimmy, we were pretty hard on Ben Roethlisberger earlier in the show. What's your take?
Well, partner, I'm going to tell you here like this here. That's not a bad take. Not a bad take at all. I like your relationship / divorce analogy.
Yeah,
like
that's
that.
Right up your alley, ain't it? Divorce.
Oh, Lord, sweet black baby Jesus, don't make me smack this boy if he interrupts me one more time. Say what?
You heard me.
Let me tell you something, bro. I know more about this stuff, and I know more about life than just divorce and everything else, all right? I know something else, too. Okay? I've been married and divorced 5 times, but that doesn't define me.
Oh, what defines you then?
You did it again, didn't you? First of all, we can't discuss that on this show, okay? Let's just say Uncle Jimmy's life story probably have to be on the Adult Swim channel or the Comedy and Smut and Where Christians Mingle.com channel or something like that. That probably what defines
you. We've heard enough, man. Can you talk about Big Ben Roethlisberger? What's your take on Big Ben?
As I said before, big boy, I liked your analogy.
Big boy.
For real. But I like mine better. Feel me of this. Feel me. The Steelers kind of remind me of this old school television show called Bonanza. Y'all ever watched Bonanza?
Oh, yeah.
It's the Cartwright family, right? The Steelers is about the Rooney family, right? Remember, Ben Cartwright had what? Three kids, right? Had Adam, the smart one, the pretty boy. Ran off, last time he was seen, he ran off into a reservation, was smoking some peyote with a squaw. That's Le'Veon Bell. Then you had the big fat one, big meathead, the big dumb one. That was Hoss. That was Ben Roethlisberger. Wasn't real bright. People liked him, and I don't know why. Then you had Lil' Joe. He was the heartthrob. He was mischievous, always getting in trouble, going in town, getting beat up, but he was the star of the show. Antonio Brown, that's Lil' Joe.
Okay.
Now, you take Lil' Joe off of Bonanza, ain't nobody gonna sit up and watch Bonanza just to see Hoss. You know Paul gonna be dead real soon. Dealing with them badass kids. Where they mama? Mama, that's what I wanna know. See here, at least Lil' Joe did go on to have a little show, Little Outhouse on the Prairie, and he had a little career.
Little Outhouse.
Ain't nobody seen Hoss no more since the Three Stooges when he was playing Curly. So we see whose career gonna last the longest.
You see what this is.
We know who gonna get bit on the train by the lion at the end. That's gonna be the dude from the Three Stooges, Ben Roethlisberger.
Not a bad take.
I
used to love Bonanza.
Yeah, I gotta watch more of it, I see.
I love Bonanza. All right, let me give you my approval rating for Big Ben. It's dropped 3 points to a 53. Man. He's a scout team player. Mm. He had been a role player. Yeah. I keep his job performance the same at a 13. Last time we did this was like December 3rd. That was when the Steelers started their losing streak. All-time greatness, I dropped him a point to an 18. Character, I dropped 2 more points.
Man.
A total of 53, 14 authenticity.
Man, he led the league in NFL passing yards. You got him at a 13? Get the man a 20. You got to
respect. They didn't make the playoffs.
I don't care. Not all my fault, obviously. All-time greatness, 19. That's a 2-time Super Bowl champion. Respect that. Character, 13. Kind of stays in the same world. A little bit down for me. Authenticity, got to drop it down a little bit too, to 10, because you could have came to your boy AB's back, but now you're going to have to pay for it.